This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 306. Today, CJ talks to Bill Baer from Microsoft about Microsoft Search, recorded live June the 6th, 2019. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC. For those of us familiar with ShareGate, we know they've always been about SharePoint and Office 365 migration. But now that we've all moved to the cloud, like me, you're probably thinking about how to scale your Office 365 to a full self-serve environment without worrying about thousands of groups and teams popping up out of nowhere, aka sprawl. That's why the folks at ShareGate developed ShareGate Apricot. It's a solution that helps us automate our Office 365 group governance by allowing us to collaborate with users to keep everyone accountable for the things they create. Their super simple to use in-app experience lets us lighten our load by delegating group management responsibilities to users we trust, aka no more sprawl. Want to get your hands on ShareGate Apricot? Try it free for 30 days at sharegate.com/cloudshow. Good morning, everybody. CJ here, flying solo this week with AC busy. So you're stuck with me. But thanks for tuning in once again. We're coming off the back of a big SharePoint conference week. Hopefully you enjoyed AC and I geeking out about power and solar cells and all that sort of stuff and Tesla batteries and things last week. And this week we're back into the thick of it with some great stuff coming off the back of SPC. I got to sit down with Microsoft's Bill Baer, who's a good friend of mine. I used to work with him at Microsoft for a number of years on the SharePoint and Office 365 teams. And he's recently taken a new role. So I sat down with him to talk to him all about what his career has been like at Microsoft and earlier, and what he's worked on and what we worked on together, and then also what he's now working on moving forward and what that means for Office 365 folks and things. So I really enjoyed this interview. I thought it was a fascinating conversation about Microsoft Search, which is some of the new things he's working on, and I hope you find it really interesting too. So without further ado, Bill Baer. Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring unlike anything you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality. Try Raygun free at raygun.com today. Hey, we all know that sometimes shift happens. That's why this spring, the inaugural Shift Happens conference will be coming to Washington, D.C. on June 12th to June 13th. Hear from industry heavy hitters, change agents, and innovators as they share digital transformation wisdom. With keynotes by Microsoft's Jeff Tepper and Tony Townes-Whitley and analyst insights from Constellation and Forrester Research, this event is not to be missed. Over 2 days, find out how to get the most out of your Office 365 and SharePoint investments and hear about the successes and failures firsthand from some of the largest and most regulated organizations. For more information, visit www.shifthappenscon.com and use the discount code CLOUDSHOW for 25% off registration for both single and group discounts. Dr. William Baer II, Esquire. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show. How are you doing?
Great. And thanks for having me. It's a busy time being both a doctor and a lawyer.
Yeah, I was going to say I say Dr. William Baer II, Esquire, because it comes up as that's who you logged in as for our in our recording software. And so that's quite a mouthful. What's the story behind that?
So, long story, and I'll try to make it short, is that occasionally you may want to book a nice dinner on a very busy weekend. And Dr. William Bear II, Esquire, tends to bump you up the reservation list, being, again, both a doctor and a lawyer.
Yeah, fair enough. That's a doctor in lawyering. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
When my son was in hospital when he was a baby, and he was being looked after by a doctor nurse. How about that?
That's
kind of similar.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. But
but anyway, so thanks for coming on the show. For those of our listeners who've been living under a rock, why don't you give yourself a quick intro and what you do and what you work on at Microsoft?
Yeah, for sure. Outside of my day-to-day role as a doctor and a lawyer that keep me exceptionally busy, I do find time also to work at Microsoft. And while I'm working at Microsoft, on a day-to-day basis, for those that have known me, I've been with SharePoint, working with or working on SharePoint in some form or another, both inside and outside of Microsoft, for almost two decades now. I started working on this little thing that we called Microsoft Managed Solutions, which was kind of my first official role on the SharePoint team.
What was that?
Well, Microsoft Managed Solutions evolved into Microsoft Managed Services, which evolved into Business Productivity Online Services Office 365.
Gotcha.
So spent time there. And so it's been a journey.
Wasn't that Energizer originally? Didn't all of that come out of Energizer? You know, I think Microsoft was like, hey, we can run this better for you, customers. And Energizer was like, okay, go for it. And I think Microsoft started running, you know, Exchange and AD and a bunch of things like that for Energizer back in the day. Was that managed services?
We did. We ran SharePoint. We ran Exchange. We ran Skype. Link at that particular point in time. We also ran a service that we called Microsoft Managed Desktop, which was a managed desktop offering. And obviously, we have that today again. So there was a bunch of services that kind of comprised MMS, and then that kind of grew up into BPOS, evolved into BPOS D, and then Office 365. So, you know, long story short, I've kind of had that chance to watch a child grow up, having been there from day one. And then throughout the course of that journey, I've worked on our server product, I think, which most people are familiar with me from. Shipping servers, hybrid, migration. Most recently, I focused on security and compliance and administration. And then even more recently, SharePoint Spaces. So some of the work that we're doing in mixed reality, or our goal to democratize mixed reality via SharePoint. Mm-hmm. And then nearer to where we're at today, Microsoft Search has been kind of my primary focus. So done a number of things across both Microsoft and SharePoint. Particular.
That's pretty much a little bit of everything, isn't it? In SharePoint land, at least, anyway.
It's a little bit of everything. It's kind of nice to be able to touch a little portion of the product in many different ways. So SharePoint obviously has done a lot of things. So it's great to be able to be the Swiss Army knife that's worked on the Swiss Army knife.
That's wild. It's fascinating to think that what we see as Office 365 today initially started as a team running a few of the server products for a customer, spiraled out of control from there.
Yeah, it's insane to look at the, you know, the user base today and to kind of go back to where we were then and thinking about popping open a bottle of champagne to celebrate our 100,000th user, which, you know, seems so insignificant today, but
you're gonna be adding that many a day now. That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, starting from that humble beginning of racking a few servers in Tuck 5, you know, down in our Tukwila data center, and that was the beginning of it all. So
it's nuts. Hey, so but a rumor has it that before Microsoft, at some stage, you were at Apple for a time.
I was, which is kind of a interesting story. So I was going to college at the time, and I was looking for work and just throwing my name in a bunch of different places. And, you know, Apple had the misfortune of saying, hey, this individual looks interesting. Let's bring them on board. So yeah, I was working at Apple on storage controllers for the G7. Huh. So I went from Apple at the time. So this was in the mid 90s. I didn't feel like Apple had any kind of viable future ahead of it. So I joined
it was on its last legs.
It was all doom and gloom. Yeah. So I made the best decision that a CPA could recommend at the time. I decided that this company's future was limited, or the opportunity was limited. So I went to a company where the future was bright and I had all the opportunity in the world. That was Digital Equipment Corporation.
So hindsight's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So I spent time at Digital working in StorageWorks, and then found myself at Compaq, and I was working on True64.
Wild.
Compaq, and then
there's a name I haven't heard in quite a while.
Yeah. And then from Compaq to HP, where I worked on HP UX. And then ultimately came to Microsoft to build this cloud thing that I'm not sure if anybody's heard of it yet, but it's
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. You can write documents and stuff, I hear. Yeah. Well, that's quite the gamut of places and history of personal computing in some ways. You've pretty much hit the nail, other than Oracle. Maybe that's next.
Yeah. Well, as soon as I decide to expand upon my my medical degree as well as my legal license, I'll probably look at an opportunity to see what I can do there.
I hear they're trying to get into the cloud. So there's hope for you at Oracle yet, perhaps.
Dr. William Baer II, Esquire Technical Fellow.
There you go. Running licensing innovation in the cloud. There you go. Oracle are known for it.
Excellent.
So we got to work together for a few years at Microsoft in the SharePoint team. And back then, I think you were working on IT Pro stuff. I can't quite remember. There was a bunch of us then around the release of SharePoint. Was it 2010? Yeah, 2010, 2013. Mm-hmm. That sort of time frame.
Yeah, I was working on IT Pro evangelism. At the time, partnering closely with our friends in Windows as well as SQL Server. And the culmination of that work became best known for Full Farm Failover.
Oh, it will go down in history as the demo that almost didn't work, right? It worked on stage and there was no fakery involved in terms of smoke and mirrors, like it was actually demonstrating the actual thing. But I will never forget. I was standing backstage at that keynote. I was going to do a demo later on it. And I will never forget the nervous laugh that Richard Riley let out when it took a little bit longer than it should have. And everything backstage was pointing at, it's not going to work, it's not going to work. And then it worked. And it all came off on the day. But that was hilarious.
That's kind of that Full Farm Failover is just those three words that'll live in infamy for at least SharePoint conferences. Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of what I was working on at the time. And then with people on the team like Paul Andrew on some of our scale, when we were moving beyond the 200 gigabyte content database. And those were good times as well. And now,
Flying racks of servers to SharePoint conference, if I remember correctly. That Full Farm Failover demo, I think, was done on a rack that we had up in Redmond for a while to build a farm. I think it was also used to show scale as well, right?
Yeah, we used that for the scale testing. For those that remember, in 2010 with Service Pack 1, we published all of these ECM limits or increases to ECM limits. And that's kind of where that hardware was derived from. I believe it was I can't remember if it was a Fujitsu head or Hitachi. It was a Hitachi head. I think it had a terabyte of RAM, and then all the storage was EMC. Yeah, and we shipped that thing down there, and then a couple of us were unfortunate enough to have to bring the rest of the hardware in a bunch of Pelican cases, which is always fun when you check in at the airport and you're rolling through TSA with 4 Pelican cases full of wires and unidentifiable.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've skydived from time to time, and you try going through an airport with a parachute. It's quite interesting. I imagine a similar level of paranoia.
Yeah, it's Chris D.B. Johnson.
That's right. I have joked with an airline hostess once as I got on a flight. She said, you're not going to use that, are you? And I said, well, I couldn't get a flight the whole, you know, I could only get a flight past my destination, so I thought I'd get out halfway.
Well, yeah.
This was pre-9/11, mind you.
So yeah, that joke wouldn't go over well today.
No more of those jokes. Hey, so speaking of full farm failover, that was at SPC 09, if memory serves correct, or was it 11? No, it was at Mandalay Bay. Must have been 09, I think.
Must have been 09 then.
Something like that. So yeah, you've worked on a number of SharePoint conferences over the years. In fact, mm-hmm. I think at least all of them since SPC 09. And then we've just come off the SharePoint conference North America down. We're both up in the Pacific Northwest of the US, yep. Down in Vegas. So how did that go for you? And I guess it's been a busy few months getting ready for that.
It's been a journey. So the SharePoint conference North America was kind of indicative of the return of the SharePoint conference and the community. And no better place to put it than Las Vegas. You know, obviously Las Vegas wasn't our only home. We had Bellevue with yep. Maiden Bauer in 2006. We had the Convention Center in Seattle 2008. We obviously had Anaheim in 11. But Vegas kind of became known as, you know, the place for the SharePoint community and the SharePoint conference. So there was no better place to have it. Tons of, you know, work going into the SharePoint conference. Obviously, we either stream or make available on demand the keynote as a component of our SharePoint virtual summit. This year, we recorded the Microsoft sessions. So we'll have those available soon on that virtual summit landing page. So a lot of work kind of went into all the logistics behind it, but also the announcements. It's incredible to think that when we were on that 2 to 3 year ship cycle with on-premises, we always had announcements available. We had, you know, folders and pages and dockets of announcements we could bring to an event because we had such lead time.
It was harder to figure out what not to talk about, right? Like you spent the entire time planning the keynote, just cutting things basically.
Yeah. So, and it's incredible to think that on this kind of rapid release cadence we have with the cloud that every year we're able to either, you know, go down to San Francisco like we did the first time, or even studios in Redmond or the last two SharePoint conferences, and still have that challenge of what do we actually announce here? Mm. And, you know, what do we bring to Ignite? So trying to just plan all of these announcements is, it's incredible to think that we're innovating at that pace where every 12 months, you know, we have enough announcements to fill multiple events.
Yeah. One of my observations was, you know, that for those who are pretty closely ingrained in the community, you hear about things more granularly through the year, right? So you see new features coming along and there's blog posts coming out all the time, as opposed to like this big one-shot release every 3 years. And then you spend the next 6 months trying to consume all of the announcements and figure out what's what. And then you've got this dearth of news for like, you know, 2 years before you get another alpha or a beta or something like that to play with. Whereas now it seems more granular and greenfields, right? It's constantly coming out. So I guess you've got to balance what do you hold back for these moments in time versus sort of rolling out through the year and getting that balance right with the different events and all that sort of stuff's got to be pretty painful.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the balance of what do you keep, what do you announce? And then at the same time, you're trying to kind of map that to tangible features, things that are real, that are tangible, that have a near-term roadmap. So if you look at the roadmap slides from the SPC sessions, you know, they're really based on kind of two concepts. One is coming soon, which is effectively those things that are hitting targeted release and, you know, ultimately are on a course to GA from there. And then there was another bucket of items that was available now was kind of, hey, it's in TR, it's kind of moving forward. Coming soon is landing within the calendar year. And I know a lot of people had that question because the roadmap slides were kind of designed to be consistent. Mm. And that consistency was easy to do with these three buckets. Available now, meaning it is rolling out to either targeted release or it's rolling out to general availability. Mm. And then there was the coming soon column, which had a bunch of announcements across all of the presentations, which focused on what are we actually delivering by end of calendar year, which means kind of, you know, setting the expectation that you should start seeing these things in the Ignite timeframe.
Well, yeah, I guess 3 to 6 month kind of range, yeah.
And then there was top of mind, which was the last bucket that we kind of put things into, which is these are things that we could be working on, or, you know, these are things that are just top of mind for us as we move our way into the next calendar year, 2020.
Gotcha. Yeah, but further out, more visionary for the future. Things to look forward to next time, basically.
Exactly.
Nice.
Come back. We'll have a new burger on the menu.
So what do you reckon that, was there one particular thing that you took away from SPC this year that you really think, not the most, it doesn't have to make what you think people will think the most interesting news is, but what for you, news-wise or feature-wise or interesting, even just interesting tidbit-wise, was there something that really sort of stood out for you personally that you think, man, I'm stoked we finally did that, or that you were excited to talk to people about?
That's actually good timing, because there was a couple of things that, you know, I kind of took away from the event. One of those things is this thing that I like to say: you could paint the Sistine Chapel, but a cat photo is going to get more likes. And the reason I like to say that is sometimes, you know, you can ship a, you know, rather benign top of the stack kind of UX feature, right? So, hey, you know, the share button, we rounded off the corners.
Yeah.
And, you know, that'll
take... Like.
Exactly. Or, you know, on the back end, you could say, hey, you know, we scaled to where you can store 1 billion items in a list, and it doesn't... So, you know, the amount of work that goes behind the latter versus, you know, the former,
exactly.
Not to take away one from another, but that kind of comes back to that concept of painting the Sistine Chapel versus Grumpy Cat.
Yeah.
But on the Grumpy Cat side, the one thing which surprised me, which was pleasantly surprising because my inbox is manageable again, was site rename.
Yeah.
That got a Rolling Stones-esque concert ovation for...
I can totally... you know, the one I'm waiting for is Tenant Rename.
That's on the roadmap. So
awesome.
Much to my dismay, I updated the user voice suggestion for site and tenant rename. It's been a year since I did that, and my life has never been the same since updating it with working on it. So
that's the thing everybody asks about, huh?
That's the thing I get email about. As soon as I flip the switch from thinking about it to working on it, all of the roadmap and when questions arose. So site rename was the thing that we announced at the SharePoint conference. You know, I'm glad it was announced to a great reception. It's a ton of work to do something which seems as insignificant as renaming a site, because as you start to peel back the layers of the proverbial onion, you have to think about links, right?
Yeah.
So, you know,
bookmarks.
How do you manage bookmarks, links in documents, links sent in email, sharing links. You have to think about the sync client, which is mapped already to, you know, the existing URL. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, you also have to think about what we call MRU, or most recently used, so Office Backstage. You also have to think about stuff like search as, you know, Discover View and recent documents and OneDrive, where it shows your recent documents in the Discover View. So there's so many of these little things, and as you start to peel back, again, those layers of the onion, there's more and more work, which seems something, which seems to be so simple, which is, hey, you know, let's just rename the site. But then there's all
the opportunity to break everything else above it if it's not taken care of correctly, right?
Right. So you have all of these downhill dependencies that you kind of have to work your way through in order to get site rename right. And then ultimately, once you get site rename right, you can take the next step, which is tenant rename. And we actually have about a dozen customers that are in a private preview.
Nice.
That are helping us validate the tenant rename experience to ensure that that all works. And fortunately, what's allowing us to get there much faster than we anticipated were our investments in multi-geo. Because multi-geo takes on some of those same characteristics. As soon as you create a new PDL or preferred data location, that PDL gets a new URL, such as my-europe.sharepoint.com or whatever it may be.
I see.
So you're effectively doing that rename
to
a certain extent, both at the tenant as well as the site level.
So there's been a bunch of cumulative work over the years that's now meaning that it's technically feasible.
Right, right.
Basically.
So that's a really cool one. And then we reserve for those, you know, that are listening that had that question, because it comes up a lot, is what happens to the old URL? The answer is we reserve it in order for a lot of the redirect capabilities to work. if you opt to delete it and reuse the URL for something else, then all your redirects are broke. So hopefully you guide your users in the right direction before you opt to reuse the old URL. In most cases, the old URL was a typo or an org change anyway.
So, or your company gets bought.
Or your company gets bought.
Or, things like that. We had this example for SPC, actually. We wanted to use our, we have a demo tenant, right, for running all of our demos out of. But it's more than just Hyperfish now. You know, we've joined forces with another couple of other companies. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't want it to be Hyperfish. We want it to be NextZen, our demo company, fictitious company. And, you know, we lived with Hyperfish demo for now. But I'm glad to hear that our sales folks will be happy that we can rename our tenant eventually. That'll be nice.
Yeah. So, and then kind of corresponding, we'll also, you know, we're working on mergers and acquisitions as well. So that's just kind of coming back to, you know, what you were just saying about Hyperfish. So at the end of the day, you know, we'll be better equipped to handle those type of scenarios.
That's a big one, right? We, one of our largest customers has bought a company twice its size and then been bought by a company twice its size. So it's been through, even since they've been our customer, they've been through two sets of mergers and acquisitions. And there's all this work that goes on, obviously, as you know, about trying to bring their tenants together or hiding the fact that really it's two tenants behind the scenes, which a lot of these companies end up doing. But we get involved because they want us to bring all their data about people, profiles, and being able to find people across companies and stuff. Anyway, I diverge. That's very exciting too.
So that was kind of one of the things that stood out. You know, obviously, I was excited to see that we've made progress. We announced it, shipping, tenant rename, hopefully soon, near term. It'd be great to have some cool announcements around that at Ignite. And then there was kind of my personal baby, per se, which was search, and seeing that come through in a number of places throughout the course of the keynote. So, you know, search, how it drives personalization via home sites, search just as a standalone enterprise search experience. So just kind of seeing some of that work come to life.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
I guess that brings us on to what you're working on now, right? I think, is today technically your first day on the new team or this week?
This week, I have dedicated my my life full-time to search. So search was something I was doing while I was sitting within the SharePoint and OneDrive team, or our teamwork team per se. So today marks kind of the first day to where I'm actually sitting in our cross-suite team. And so I'm outside looking in at SharePoint. So kind of moved over horizontally from you know, that dedicated SharePoint team now to our cross-suite team. And our cross-suite team focuses on a lot of our AI investments. So we own My Analytics and Cortana. We also own a lot of the networking data center and multi-geo work. So you can kind of think about those fabric-like-esque investments that we make that are more holistic, that touch endpoints across M365 versus kind of those discrete apps and services.
Gotcha. So, and so you'll be specifically focusing on all new search investments going forward, what Microsoft is basically doing with search in the cloud.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well, that is a huge, interesting topic in and of itself, especially with the history of search, right? We've had SharePoint's had search in it for some time. Microsoft made an acquisition with Fast. Even so far as back, didn't we end up shipping like Search Server or something like that? Wasn't there a SharePoint search SKU at some point?
There was. This search has kind of taken up on a life of its own over the course of time. So search kind of evolved as being this super easy thing that we shipped, you know, with Portal Server 2001. That's when everybody was putting boxes under their desk.
Yeah.
And our friends in MS Web, or now MSW, kept shutting them down because everybody was crawling everything. So, you know, we've gone from that full text, which was what everybody cared about, to our fast acquisition where we had, you know, fast for SharePoint, ESP, and everything that came along with it. Obviously, then search server and our search SKU. And then, you know, kind of fast forwarding from SharePoint being the predominant or preeminent search experience at Microsoft to our Yammer acquisition, to which most people attribute to social. But we also, as part of that acquisition, really got to get our hands on Open Graph. So then you kind of go from Open Graph to Office Graph and a way to visualize Office Graph, which became Delve.
Yeah, that's
so there's,
right.
There's been kind of this long evolution of search, but it's exciting that it build, you know, we're finally able to say, hey, guess what we're rolling out? We're finally rolling out a coherent search experience that spans Microsoft. It's not, you know, just kind of SharePoint. Hey, you need to have SharePoint in order to do search, or you need to have Exchange in order to do search. We now have a coherent and consistent search offer.
So now when you say consistent, we're even talking about consistency from a perspective of like the search box on Windows 10 and stuff like that, right? Like you'll be able to get at this sort of search from all sorts of different places is my understanding.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, to kind of bring people up to speed, Microsoft Search is an amalgamation of two pieces of technology. We've taken the artificial intelligence tech from Bing and paired that with the personalized insights that we can derive from the Microsoft Graph. So we've kind of taken these two pieces of mature technology and pulled them together as the foundation of our search experience.
Gotcha.
So then once we had established that foundation, the next step was is getting it into endpoints. And the reason it's Microsoft Search and not Microsoft 365 Search is exactly as you mentioned. So you can find it from Bing all the way down to Windows 10, and then all of the apps and services in between that comprise Microsoft 365. So whether you're searching in Bing or searching in Windows or searching in SharePoint, we're going to give you a consistent experience that's built on the same search foundation. So you're not going to a discrete, you know, Windows search experience versus SharePoint search experience.
Yeah, you don't have to pick and choose. Oh, I need to find this thing right now. I've got to go into, you know, Yammer to go find Yammer stuff.
Right.
Teams to go find Teams stuff, or SharePoint to go, you know, that sort of thing. Gotcha.
Yeah, it's kind of this ability to bring search wherever you're working, but it, you know, and deliver the same consistent result set wherever you may be working. Now, obviously, the endpoints are context aware. So if you're searching in Outlook, chances are you're either looking for mail, an attachment, or some calendar item, a meeting.
Yeah.
You're not looking for SharePoint news in most cases, or a file somewhere in Yammer or a Yammer conversation. So we do prioritization to make each endpoint context aware.
Yeah.
If you're searching in Word, you're probably looking for something specific to the document that you're working on, an object within the canvas itself, or another document to help you complete your work. But we're going to show you, you know, other results, the people and everything else that matters. But again, you know, trying to make it as context aware. The only endpoint that's more holistic would be the Bing endpoint. And that's kind of self-explanatory because if you're searching via the address bar, chances are you're looking for something and you don't know where it is. And
yeah, that's the global search, so to speak.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That's exciting. What about stuff like, so, well, it goes so far as to, you know, reach into old file shares people have on-prem and stuff. Are you tackling the hybrid scenarios as part of this?
Yeah, so there's a couple of ways that you can do that. Step one is if you're an on-premises customer, you've obviously, you probably have a search implementation and it's probably based on SharePoint. If you want to bring that information into the Microsoft search experience, the easiest way is just deploy the cloud search service application, which is the evolution of hybrid search.
Gotcha.
So hybrid search was the old inbound, outbound, and bidirectional topology. That was all about federation. So you had two different result blocks, no affinity, no real established relevance between cloud and on-prem.
It was two separate indexes, right?
Like exactly.
You have the cloud index and the on-prem index. Gotcha.
Yep. Cloud search service application is what aggregates your on-prem and your cloud index together into one unified cloud index. So what you could theoretically do is create your search farm, set up hybrid search or cloud search, and then crawl your file shares like you can with SharePoint naturally. Crawl your other SharePoint environments and just ingest that data. Now, the next question becomes is, okay, well, you know, I have other data sources. Is Microsoft Search going to help me there? And the answer to that is, yeah, The answer to that is that's a great question.
I'm really glad you asked yourself that, Bill. That was going to be my next question, is what if I want to stick in other kinds of data?
Yeah, so if you didn't follow along with some of the build keynotes, particularly Satya's keynote as well as Rajesh Shah's opening remarks, we showed a couple of examples of search vision there from a connectivity perspective or a search ecosystem perspective. Mm. We showed a couple of things. One was task completion in the Word Canvas. It has less to do with connector ecosystem and more to do with this idea that search is meaningful and it helps you complete tasks and provides you answers. So it's not only insightful in that you get relevant information, but it also helps you do your job via machine reading comprehension, natural language understanding and generation. But then in Rajesh's keynote, we demonstrated the ability to connect back to sources. In that particular example, such as ServiceNow. So we were able to use search to ingest data from ServiceNow in the form of a ticket and use that ticket within the context of Word. So search is pervasive because it touches all the endpoints, but it can also touch endpoints that exist outside of the Microsoft 365 walled garden, per se.
Yeah, we had some of that, right? If memory serves correctly, there was some of those concepts existed in Fast way back in the day.
Yeah.
Remember you used to be able to build some sort of connectors or plugins, I don't even know what they called them, for Fast Search. And I guess it's along similar lines, right? Being able to plug in at some point in the process to inject your content.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, you know, that's kind of the idea. And the idea too is you know, building connectors that are, you know, just service ready connectors. And I guess the way to differentiate between what I mean by something that's service ready versus not is, you know, BDC, ultimately BCS, kind of showing my age when I said BDC.
You're going to bring a tear to my eye, Bill. Yeah. I used to work, when I joined the SharePoint engineering team in 2007, I worked on external content types, which the code name was virtual lists, right? But it was all using BCS behind the scenes and everything. Anyway.
Yeah, so then, yeah, the virtual list kind of became the external lists, I believe, is what we ended up.
Yeah, or external content types, right?
I think. Yeah, so, you know, that was kind of the old way of bringing data in, but, you know, it wasn't as plug and play as you would want it to be. And really, our vision is to just deliver great connectors that are more or less plug and play. So effectively, some of the things that we're going to do later this year is we're going to be shipping some out-of-the-box connectors as preview. Later this year. So you can think of, you know, initial scenarios like file shares and structured data connectors. We're also going to
Are those web-based things? Like if I was a developer and I wanted to go plug it into my version of ServiceNow, whatever that happened to be, my own proprietary internal IT help desk ticketing system, would I go build a web service to do that? Or how do I, like, or is it some .NET code? Like what does that look like?
Yeah, for that particular scenario, what we're going to be also introducing later this year is an ingestion API for any content.
So you can push stuff as opposed to have it pulled from you.
Right, exactly.
Gotcha. Oh,
that that ingestion API will be definitely useful for those scenarios. And then we'll also enable a bunch of security trimming that's going to be based on Azure AD.
Gotcha.
Which is going to be pretty cool. And then, you know, for SharePoint, you know, we're going to introduce like a conversations vertical. One of the things that we've already introduced is we have a search API in the graph, which is beta today. So that search API is going to be, you know, super valuable for those that want to experiment it. And the way you can think about the search API that's available today in beta is really it's going to enable developers to kind of implement queries and provide complete recall results. So you can get suggestions, recommendations in the search box control, in addition to an event API. So you can send relevant signals back as well. So
that's nice. So you could, being an ISV, this piques my interest, right? If you're building some sort of experience, you can call these APIs to go surface the same results that you get in that global search box at the top of the suite nav, right?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So you can take advantage of that. And then, like I said, over, you know, later this year, ingestion API, connectors, security trimming based on Azure AD. And then we're also going to, you know, start talking about popular third-party connectors in addition to, you know, surrounding those with a more robust set of APIs. So, you know, Microsoft Search is definitely an enterprise search experience versus, hey, it's search in Microsoft 365. It's more than just that.
Yeah, definitely. Being able to plug in your own content, whether it's, you know, pushing stuff into the index or what have you, then I can imagine that companies would be very interested in plugging their own data sources in to give a really sort of across the board holistic search experience for their employees.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you already probably, if you're using something like Teams, you're probably using connectors today, or if you're using Power Apps or Flow, you may be using some other data gateways or otherwise to connect back to some of your systems, you know, whether you're trying to drive some kind of, you know, business process management, BPM-ish type scenario, maybe it's workflow related, but, you know, discovery is equally important, you know, so you don't have these isolated silos of data. And, you know, the APIs are important because you do want that relevancy. If you do have, you know, something in SAP, in all likelihood, there's probably a related document somewhere.
Yeah.
So you do want that relevance to where you can pull these things together. And you know, today, to get an example of that, is if you're using, you know, if you're a Microsoft 365 subscriber, you know, just go to Bing and, you know, search for something that you know exists internally, or maybe that you don't. And you'll see, you know, how we can pull conversations from Yammer and Teams as well as files and people, and then pull it all together into a unified set of results to where there's, you know, affinity between a Teams conversation, a Yammer conversation, person and email. So
right.
It's yeah. It's definitely cool stuff. It's been a long time coming. So, you know, here we are. And, you know, nobody has to put a box under their desk and crawl MSW anymore.
I remember one of the best innovations in search when I was at Microsoft many years ago was when somebody figured out, I think it was Microsoft Web, figured out how to put a new tab on the search experience where you could go in and search Siebel.
Yeah.
Siebel was the CRM system at the time. And you'd put in, you know, like Coca-Cola or I don't know, Lockheed Martin or some company name, and you'd be able to go and find the account contacts at Microsoft for that particular customer. And that seems so basic and silly today, but was just groundbreaking at the time in a really large company that I was in the New Zealand subsidiary at the time. And the fact that I could, it was so hard to figure out which Microsoft person was the account manager for a particular customer.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had multiple Siebel accounts in different geographies, multiple Siebel instances in different geographies, and they didn't sync, and it was a pain in the butt. And only certain people had access to Siebel anyway. And so being able to search was just like the coolest thing ever. And so I can absolutely imagine there is examples of all sorts of line of business systems, like, you know, like parts databases or manufacturing systems or ERP systems or CRM systems or HR systems or all that sort of stuff that people will want to plug into this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then, you know, it's very similar to the Siebel scenario. I remember us introducing Dr. Whom.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Whom.
So, yeah. You know, you needed to find a person.
Yeah.
And
yeah, Dr. Whom is the business. Like, somebody built that. It was the most basic app, right? It wasn't even that good looking. I'm pretty sure it had an optimized for IE4 logo on the bottom left.
Yeah.
And may still do to this day. But, yeah, Dr. Whom was a great search experience. I mean, it was just powerful. Not that pretty, but...
Yeah, it's particularly if you were looking for people, and you know, most you know, a lot of the searches that we see are actually, you know, looking for people, and then people are what guides you to documents and conversations. In most cases, when you interact with somebody, that's what you're doing. You're interacting with an individual. So you're sitting in a meeting, and Chris says, "Yeah, I'll share this file with you," and then you go to your next meeting, and Brian says, "I'll share this file with you," and it goes on and on, and by the end of the day, you don't remember the file names or the file types, or the properties and attributes associated with that file. You remember the interaction with the individual. So the easy way to get, you know, back to work quickly is, you know, to search by individual, and then that's kind of what guides you to the files and the conversations in many cases, which is, I remember, you know, Chris sent me an email yesterday, see, and that's kind of the way you recall things.
Yeah.
If I recalled, I remember the subject of the email was, then I wouldn't need search.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You could just look it up. I really want a search box where I could type something along the lines of something from a meeting last Wednesday with a guy I think was called Bill. Mm-hmm. Right? Because often in those meetings at Microsoft, you get like dozens of people sometimes, and you don't know them. You know their face, but you don't necessarily know their last name, perhaps, or what team they work in, or what have you, or even when the meeting was exactly, right? It might have been a month or two ago. And you just want to be able to recall, you're like, oh yeah, somebody mentioned something about this topic in a meeting, you know, a month ago, but I can't recall who they were. And so, you know, being able to find stuff like that is really... it's a very hard search problem, but bringing all those correlation things mm-hmm. together would be super powerful.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's gathering not only those signals, but also individuals' attributes as well. Because in a meeting, you know, most of the time there's 10, 15 people in there, and, you know, it's usually I'm Bill, I'm Chris, I'm John. It's not I'm Chris Johnson or I'm Dr. William Baer II Esquire. pleased to meet you, unless I'm booking at a restaurant that's nice and busy at the time.
Yeah.
But so, you know, having both the signals as well as the attributes and being able to pull those together and kind of start at the individual and work down from there versus starting at the top of the funnel, because the individual is effectively the bottom of the funnel and the top of the funnel is all the data. And, you know, if I knew the name of the document and every single attribute that that document contained, then I probably wouldn't need search.
Yeah.
You know, then I would be Dr. William Baer II Esquire Watson.
Exactly. Yeah, you'd be the all-thinking AI brain. Perfect. No, I totally agree. I think people are the center of the universe and all these things. And obviously, I'm a little biased. I started a company around data about people. So I totally get the value of people. Right. And I hope to provide your search engine lots of good data about people. That's our goal in life. So we're very much looking forward to putting people at the center of things in search.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see what people do, particularly with our APIs.
Yeah.
Really, really keen to see, you know, how people are able to take the wealth of world work knowledge and pull that together in creative and new ways.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, well, I wish you very good luck in your new role. It sounds exciting, and obviously it's something a bit new and different for you. So I hope it all goes really, really well. And we'll all be watching for new exciting news about search in the future. And hope it all goes swimmingly.
Yeah, I'll throw a shameless plug out there. If you want to learn more about search and download some cool stuff and keep up to date on our APIs as they become available or just learn more, aka.ms/Microsoft Search takes you to the Resource Center.
That's kind of,
super simple. That's kind of be the center of gravity. But yeah, and now from here, I'm going to go buy a monitor stand.
I hope not that monitor stand.
It's counterbalanced from what I hear.
Better be more than counterbalanced. Anyway, good luck with your monitor stand search. But Bill, thank you very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate spending the time sitting down in your relaxing period post-SPC and pre-new role shenanigans. So thanks again for making the time. And we look forward to talking to you again in the future about search.
Yeah, for sure. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
See ya.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews and other cool cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.